radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Cyberspace is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new page. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here from the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Oh, Listening to Junior Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up. All right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. We started off the program, the message in the music from the OJs, How Time Flies. That will set the stage for our guest, John Jack Lemmon, who's a good friend of mine, and I had him on my show several times when I was doing terrestrial radio, and he's the author of a book entitled Black Gold, The African-American Athlete at Media High School, 1915 to 1966. He chronicles the influence and the role of African-Americans in media Pennsylvania as residents and as influential personages in the high school as well as athletes. So we'll hear his interesting conversation following these messages. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now there is also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned.
All right, we're speaking with Jack Lemmon, John Jack Lemmon, who is a Cheney alumnus, and he is a writer, a historian, a genealogist, and he has published a book entitled Black Gold, The African American Athlete in Media High School from 1915 to 1966. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how, what piqued your interest in chronicling blacks in media and specifically black athletes.
Good. Well, thank you very much for having me, Rick. I really enjoy seeing you again. Black Gold is an extension of a genealogy project that my family originally started. My family has a great interest in genealogy and our roots and things like that. And actually, we are very fortunate to be able to trace my maternal ancestors back to two separate plantations in Virginia, where they were slaves. Prior to the start of the Civil War, my great-great-grandfather was able to escape from his plantation, the Ridley Plantation. His father was also his master. So when he escaped, he had such light skin and freckles that the slave posses and slave patrols never stopped him because they thought he was a white man. So he walked from Richmond, Virginia, all the way to Media. Now, we don't have any documentation, but we have a very strong feeling that he was assisted on his journey from the Underground Railroad. When he made it to Media, he was sheltered by Quaker families, especially the Yarnell family, who was a very prominent abolitionist family in Media. And then his wife, Commonwealth wife, Sarah Jane, was from a separate plantation, and she was not liberated until the Union Army invaded Virginia during the Civil War. She then joined the Army as contraband, and under the protection of the Union Army, she was a laundress and she was a cook. And then she stayed with the Army during their battles in Virginia until they started to return north to Arlington. Her brother was traveling with her, and her brother decided that was enough for him. So he stayed in Arlington and became one of the first black gardeners in Arlington. Sarah Jane continued her journey, and she must have had some type of communication with my great-great-grandfather, who was Cornelius Ridley. So they ended up reunited in Media, Pennsylvania. They were sheltered again by Quakers, given protection against slave catchers who were trying to reclaim their property or things like that. And then after years of hard work, they were able to move into their first house, a little four-room frame house at 308 North Arnold Street. There they had three children, George Washington Ridley, Rachel Ann Ridley, and the youngest child was William Henry Ridley. Now, William Henry Ridley also became the first colored graduate of Media High School. So, in exploring the genealogy, we actually stumbled across the fact that he was the first black graduate of Media High School. And when Media High School closed in 1966, prior to that, I was the last black graduate to graduate in 1964. Mm-hmm. Media is a
now,
very...
Was that common to have years interspersed between black attendees graduating and then 2 years later, was that the norm?
Well, yes and no. After my great-grandfather graduated from Media High School, family remained in Media, and then my grandmother attended Media High School, and then several of her children attended Media High School. And unbeknownst to me, they became very great athletes. They were first athletes in the family. So I had three aunts and my own mother who were athletes, pretty notable athletes at Media High School. And then, again, exploring all of our genealogy roots, this is how I came across the idea for the book Black Gold. Because as young people, especially young men of color in Media High School, we were never introduced to the previous generations of great athletes, and there were many. We had an athlete at 1936, 1937, that was the national scholastic high jump record holder. We never knew about that. We were never introduced to Mr. Robert Burnett. We had a female athlete who was the national record holder in the standing broad jump. Girls actually had a track program for public schools from 1922 to 1932 in Delaware County. So this woman, Marion Gibson, was the national scholastic record holder in the standing broad jump. In those days, women were not allowed to run and jump because rules that they may injure their reproductive organs. So they had to stand and then they had to jump. And she jumped farther than the Olympic champion at the time, Jean Schilling, who was also from, I think, Haverford or Bryn Mawr. So we never knew about these great athletes that came before us. So that's when I started digging, and I started with my aunt, Nina Hawkins Randolph, who was the first athlete in our family, and she's still living, 98 years old, and she still had her original yearbook, and her memory is sharp as a bell. So I started with a first-hand interview with her, trying to get the flavor of the times and what blacks had to go through during those times. Although Media, on the surface, was a very liberal town because of the Quaker influence, blacks knew their place. We had a lake in the town that blacks were prohibited from swimming in. We had one movie in the town where blacks had segregated seating. Media actually had a black elementary school, segregated black elementary school, until 1945, and a lot of people that came after that really didn't know that. So I wanted to make sure that I got the flavor of the times in the book, and my only regret is that I didn't start it sooner when many of the people that are in the book were living. But I did do a, I think, a very fair representation of Media and the athletes, male and female athletes, because I wanted to make sure that everybody got their due. I was very blessed and fortunate to meet some really great people. And it's always great when an author can meet the people that he's writing about, you know, because it took me back in time over and over again, and I was just amazed at some of the stories and challenges and obstacles that these black athletes had overcome.
Where did you get the pictures from? Because the book is chock full of pictures, so where did the pictures come from?
From a variety of sources. A lot of people had home photos that were placed in old Bibles that they trusted me to copy. I went to the Media School District and gained permission to use a lot of their pictures from their yearbooks and things like that. So I went all the way back to 1915. And there were some gaps in the chronological dates because Media did not always print yearbooks. Mm-hmm. The very first yearbook they printed was 1933, but Media High School actually started in 1882. So there were no yearbooks from 1882 to 1933. And then there are only three known yearbooks that were printed in the 30s, 1933, 34, and 35. So I was able to get pictures of those yearbooks. And then when we moved to the 40s, the school district gave the students, the senior class, the option of either printing a yearbook or going to the trip to Washington, D.C. So most of the time, the seniors would opt for the trip. So there's only three known yearbooks from the 40s. So I got those pictures. And then media printed consecutive yearbooks from 1950 all the way to media closing in 1966 when they merged with Penn Press.
Mm. I saw some box scores in the book. Where'd you get those?
I got those from another source, Phil Heron, the managing editor and sports director at the Daily Times newspaper, which was formerly the Chester Times newspaper, also gave me permission to reprint scores. Mm-hmm. So that's where I got some of my pictures of my box scores and newspaper articles about sports contests with media.
Mm-hmm. Now, sports, although in the present era it has taken on this separatist view, you know, because you have the professionals and their celebrities and their stars, was athletics is an integral part of the community, and it reflects pretty much the values and the socioeconomic realities of the community that it spawns in. So what did you find with the athletes and the times? How did they reflect the tenor of the times from your research?
Well, the first thing that I found is, regrettably, some of our greatest athletes, black athletes, that played sports in media never graduated. Media had a policy of allowing great athletes, great black athletes, to play sports for 2, 3, 4 years, and then when their eligibility was over, then they would kindly ask them to leave the school.
Were they pushed on, like we're familiar with nowadays, where they just pass them on? Or
they would pass them on until their eligibility ran out. Mm-hmm. And then after the eligibility ran out, they would stick them in the classroom. And of course, they didn't have the academic supports and counseling and other things to really make it in the classroom. So more often than not, they would drop out of school. Sports was a very integral part of the African-American community in media because that was a rite of passage for many, many, many generations, because they knew that more than likely they were not going to go to college. They didn't have the academics to go to college. They didn't have the means to go to college. And that was their 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 years of fame. Mm-hmm. And boy, did they take advantage of it.
Now, were there feeder or support programs, or did you have volunteer programs like in the churches in media, the black churches that supported that?
Well, the black churches were very, very instrumental in the development of the African American community in media. There were 4 black churches primarily that were feeder programs as far as Sunday school programs, free tutoring programs, and things like that. The one church, one of the churches is Honeycomb Church, which is in Lima, just down the road from Pancras. And that church actually has been designated as an Underground Railroad depot. Mm-hmm.
So that's a historical landmark.
Yeah, exactly. So Honeycomb Church in Lima. And then in media, there were 3 churches, Trinity, UAME, on Olive Street, Campbell, AMA, which is also on Olive Street, which is the church that my great-great-grandparents helped found after, you know, they arrived in media. And then there's another church on State Street, Second Baptist Church. So those 4 churches were very instrumental in developing the culture and maintaining a network, if you will, of black families in the media area.
Now, a lot of people may not know Southeast Pennsylvania, Southeast Delco. They might not know that media is the county seat. So how did that status, being the county seat, impact black in the media area, or did
it? Yes, it did. Media was actually a town that was created on paper. In 1850, the Pennsylvania legislature bought up area for four major farms, and they designated those farms to develop a school, develop residential communities, and things like that. So Media High School started in 1882 as a middle school, kind of elementary school, and then it progressed from there. Now, at one time, Chester, Pennsylvania was the county seat, mm-hmm. but because of media developing so rapidly, they transferred the county seat from Chester, Pennsylvania to Media. So it was a more local area between Westchester and Chester. So it was basically a political maneuver. But because it became the county seat, then it also, the level of education rose substantially. So that was an additional magnet for African Americans, especially African Americans who were formerly slaves and wanted to have their children get the best education possible, they graduated to Media. And again, although there was only one segregated school in the history of the Media School District, African Americans were still relegated to certain pockets of Media. I grew up on the North Media side. There were African Americans on the South Media side, and different pockets. Again, so those pockets became very tight-knit communities, and we had a grapevine, as you will, of information, but there were very, very few economic opportunities.
I was going to ask you that, because Chester, you had the docks, you had the shipbuilding company, you had light industry and heavy industry. I don't see any remnants of that in Media. How did the blacks survive?
Well, barely. If you were politically connected to the Republican Party, you got certain perks. And one of the main perks is very prestigious jobs working at the post office. But again, you had to be part of the Republican Party machine to get those jobs. Many African Americans traveled to Chester, worked on the docks, worked in the industries down there. We had a trolley line that went right to Philadelphia, so many African Americans went to work in that area. Other than that, there was domestic work. There was work as dishwashers and things like that. My own grandmother was worked in the Media School District as a dishwasher for about 30 years. Although Media High School started in 1882, they didn't have a black employee other than service workers until 1964. And then that lady also was a graduate of Cheney University. So Lorene Bird Silva. So again, we were going to a high school. We were living in a community where we were trying to get an education to better ourselves. However, when we looked around, there were very few economic opportunities. So we knew it was very ingrained in us. If we were going to succeed, we probably had to go away to college and then go away to work, or at least travel and commute some distance in order to live in Media, to afford to live there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long did it take you to write the book? And now that it's completed, what are you doing to promote it other than appearing on interviews like this?
Well, I hope that this appearance on your program will spur interest in the book. But it took me 4.5 years to write this book. And it was like the birth of a child. You nurture it and you feed it, and you try this and you try that, and you talk to people and stuff like that. There were many times that I doubted that I was going to be able to pull this off, but I really owed it to I felt that I owed it to my ancestors who established the family of media that didn't have the opportunity for education and suffered through a lot of discrimination and things like that. I personally felt that that was one of my missions in life, to honor them by this book. And then honoring a lot of other African American contemporaries and people that came before me. So I've got a great marketing company called Choice Marketing in Aston. They've helped with mailings. I've gotten some publicity from local newspapers in Delaware County, the school district. I've spoken at different groups and things like that, especially all of the churches. So with this program, and then I'm going to be placing my book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I have a great website. The website is www.AfricanAmericanAthlete@MediaHighSchool.com. I know it's long, but I wanted to make sure that the title would be very easy to remember and very similar to my book.
Now, you all, to accompany the book, you also have the DVD. So tell us about that.
Yeah, the DVD was produced by my good friend and football teammate, as a matter of fact, you know, a common friend, Gregory Harris. Greg and I were sometimes roommates at Cheney as undergraduates. I actually started at Cheney in 1964, and that's when I met Greg. We developed a bond, if you will, relationship, and he's been like a brother to me. And Greg was always one of the smartest guys at school. If I had a math problem, I'd go to Greg. If I had a science problem, I would go to Greg. And all the guys did. And he was very good-natured about it. Greg has a company called Whistle Stops Productions. And he's just a brilliant guy. So I went to him. I talked over what my project is. And he put together a fantastic video that kind of matches the book. And the video is a great bunch of stills of pictures, Media High School. I've got some of my relatives in there. I got a lot of people in there. So for a very, very short time.
A package offer? In other words, you buy the book, you get the DVD?
Absolutely.
So how do you do e-commerce on your website? In other words, can people go up there, use PayPal or credit card or whatever to purchase the book and the DVD?
No, not at this time. I don't have PayPal set up. So what they can do is they can write to my company, Diversified Communication Services, okay, and order a book.
Well, give us the name and the address for your company.
Okay, Diversified Communications Services, P.O. Box 1481, Belmar, New Jersey. Now, Belmar is spelled B-E-L-L-M-A-W-R. Don't confuse that with the Belmar up in Northern Jersey. So, Belmar, New Jersey, 08099. Okay? So, you can reach me there, and then also you can reach me through my email at jclemon2@yahoo.com, jclemon2@yahoo.com, and I'm more than interested in coming and speaking to any groups during Black History Month or at any time to promote my book. I do my speaking engagements for free, I have a limited number of copies of the DVD and also the book, but I wanted to make sure that everyone in Delaware County and the Delaware Valley area has an opportunity to share some of the rich information that I was able to find. And it's a great story. It's kind of two or three stories in one. It's a genealogy story, and then also it's a story about African Americans in Media, Pennsylvania. It's a story about the struggle of African Americans to get quality education, and it's also a reflection and a recognition of all the hundreds and hundreds, Rick, of African American male and female that have been ignored in history. Mm-hmm. And Black Gold, I hope, corrects that. Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you like to see come out of this? In other words, your goal was genealogy, also tapping and uniting your family's history with the overall community and linking it to the broader Delaware County connection, because you have Chester, you got the surrounding schools, you have athletics, but you also have Cheney. And so once you have all of that in the book and the DVD with the pictures and the documentation, you're quite knowledgeable about the history of media. What would you hope to come out of that in addition to the book?
Well, a lasting awareness. A lasting awareness of the integral role that Cheney University played in the development of the African American community in media. The Media High School, again, started in 1882, but we didn't have our first black teacher until 1964. I think people should be aware of that. Media also has a long-standing relationship with Cheney, going back to the days of the Cheney Normal School, mm-hmm. which was the name of Cheney before right. Cheney yeah. University. And graduates and student teachers from Cheney would come to media to supplement the education of the school district by making sure that the African American community had qualified teacher-student relationships. Mm-hmm. It's also my hope that every library and every school in Delaware County has at least a copy of this book. We have a lot of great books, but this is the first book that comprehensively studies the African American community in media. A lot of those families are gone now. Mm-hmm. A lot of those families have been forgotten. This is a recognition and celebration of the African American struggle and experience in media. So it's my hope that colleges around the media area, Delaware Valley, have a copy of this book. Libraries have a copy. Schools have a copy. I've donated a copy to Pancras High School. I'm working on donating a copy to the Chester Historical Society. Mm-hmm. I'm going to place a book there. I want to place a book at Cheney. I want to place a book in all of the areas that African Americans can go to research their culture and their history. And although this is centered on Delaware County and media, it's a story that could be repeated anywhere that black people have experienced.
Well, that was one of my thoughts. Just like you are a descendant of people who came into the area, and that you left, you went to college, you left, and you no longer reside in media, there are probably some descendants of some of the families that are in this book that aren't aware of the importance of their relatives or their ancestors, and perhaps if they knew, they would, you know, clearly be sparking interest and either buy the book or be a conversation piece and help them track down, because as you know, genealogy for African American is very difficult. It's not something that you can just look at, okay, we came over on the Mayflower, or we came over on this, and you have all this documentation. Basically, that slavery gap is for many people, is insurmountable.
Exactly. Slavery, a lot of people don't realize this, and this is one reason why, as a teacher, I made sure that I taught African-American history. And not African American history during African American History Month, okay? Because you can't teach American history, which is what African American history is, in 1 month. So I would make sure that of course, we celebrated African American history, but also when we celebrated Women's History Month, I made sure that we studied the accomplishments of women who were African Americans. Okay? So we studied every month about African American history because that is part of world history and it is part of African American history. So I was fortunate to able to track down from publicity and word of mouth and that grapevine that I talked about between the churches, the African American churches, I was able to get numerous contact data and actually sit down and talk with people who were widows or widowers or grandchildren or things like that of the people in the book. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have moved away from media. It's been hard to contact them. They're dispersed all over the country, Texas, California, Florida, things like that. I think I've made a very, very good effort in contacting, you know, the people that are still around or still have descendants and things like that. There aren't a lot of African Americans in media anymore, mm-hmm. because the media is the county seat. Property values have risen exponentially, and there have been a lot of African Americans who have not been able to afford to stay in media.
Are those communities still intact?
No, they're not. They're not now interspersed with law offices because the properties, the property values, you would not believe how expensive they are. So with expense, there's taxes, there's upkeeps and things like that. And
now, is media one of those communities where they mandate a certain look, so you have to have a period look? Because you mentioned the Quakers, and it's like that in Haddonfield and to a certain degree in Morristown in New Jersey. Haddonfield, New Jersey, and Morristown, where they, again, it's very similar. They had the Quaker veneer, but underneath it, it was still the racism, and underneath right. had little sections where blacks lived, but outside the town, they have this flair and a lot of zoning and land uses laws. You can't. You can only use certain colors. You can only use certain facades. So is media like that?
Only on State Street, the main commerce street, which is where the trolley from 69th Street comes in and out. So other than the State Street area, media has not imposed any type of regulations and things like that. What I will say is that when the original African American families decide to sell or things like that, they either gut the houses or tear them down and put up condos, all right, because, again, that's how valuable the land is. Now, we are fortunate because the house that my great-grandfather, one of the houses that he owned is still existing, and my aunt, who is one of the athletes in the book, still resides in that house.
Does she have children?
Yes, she does have children. She
are
has
they interested
one child.
In, other than, I mean, obviously she lives there, but are they interested in the property, maintaining the property?
Her daughter is undecided because she wants to, move to either Philadelphia or Maryland. So she's undecided about retaining the property. And it's my hope from my brother, who's still living, Dr. Sam Lemon, who's a professor at Newman College. We're desperately trying to hold on to that property, because that property has been in our family's possession for over 100 years. That was called the big house. Now, the small house, which is the first property that my great-great-grandparents were able to purchase, that was torn down, and that is now the headquarters of the Rosemary Media School District.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's an irony there. Mm-hmm. Again, when I ride down the street, Rick, and I'm looking over here, and my buddy used to live over here, and my friends used to live over here, and to look and see different people coming out of those houses that I don't recognize. It's kind of unsettling, I'll tell you the truth. But it's the best feeling in the world when I visit media, and I go several times a month, to stop by and see, you know, the original people, you know, if I can use that term. And it takes you back in time.
Right.
That makes me...
Especially, it seems, as we age, we tend to look to make connections, at least some of us do, to our roots. Now, some people just keep on moving, but it seems like there is a part of us that wants to keep in touch with that element that nurtured us at one point.
Absolutely. You know, the sad thing, Rick, about today's society, and probably in particular the African-American society, when I did something wrong, when I lived in media, when I was growing up, when I did something wrong, if I was around the block, Mrs. Somerville would correct me.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mrs. Somerville would call my mother and tell, you know, why she had to correct me. And then I got it from Mrs. Somerville, and then I got it at home,
mm-hmm.
all right? We've lost that communal village parenting, you know. Now it seems that when you say something to a child that's misbehaving, when you try to redirect, then, you know, what are you talking to my child for? You're not my parent, you know. And it's that has been lost. And I think that is to a detriment of our society in general, and especially to the African-American community, because that has disintegrated the cohesiveness of the village. The village, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, we had that village, you know. And also, if our parents didn't have enough food to feed us, other communities would step up to the plate and either send food to our house or invite us in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not aware of many communities, if any, that attitude, that communal attitude, that communal parenting attitude, the family attitude, still exists anymore. It might, but not to the extent that it was. And I think that's a real tragedy.
Well, I think that is one of the elements. As this current society crumbles under the weight of the negativity and the self-indulgence, the selfishness, materialism, I think people will start to wake up that, hey, there's a better way. That me first, you know, the one with the most toys at the end wins, all that kind of stuff. I think that's going to fall by the wayside. Give us the name of your company, the address, so people can and the website, so people can go up and check on it.
Good, I'd be glad to. The name of the book is Black Gold, The African-American Athlete at Media High School During the Era of 1915 to 1966. My company is Diversified Communications Services. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 1481. That's in Belmar, New Jersey. And Belmar is spelled B-E-L-L-M-A-W-R, New Jersey. And the zip is 08099. The book is $39.95, and it's free postage to residents of Delaware County. If you live outside of Delaware County, please add $2.95 for shipping and handling. And as soon as we get your order, we promise to get it right out to you within 48 hours, so you'll have your book almost immediately.
Keep in mind, Belmar is the postal distribution center for South Jersey. So
that's correct.
If you send it out there, you can get that real fast.
Real fast. And that's one of the reasons why I chose Belmar as opposed to like a post office in Media or other places in South Jersey. Please don't forget my website, www.AfricanAmericanAthleteAtMediaHighSchool.com. Long word, but it's a great website. You'll have a chance to check out the video. The video is... Okay. So you'll have a chance to check that out. We do have a limited number of videos left. There's a package deal. You get the video and the book for $39.95. I think it's a great deal. And again, it's great read for a lot of reasons. It's a heartwarming story about genealogy. It's a great story, inspirational story about African American athletes. It's a documentary. And again, this is the first book that has ever been written about African Americans in media. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a collector's item.
Now, because, you know, if you looked in the website and they asked you to put tags on it, one of the tags would be media, and another tag would be lemon, another tag would be genealogy. Did you get any support, or have you gotten any feedback from the local genealogy societies about it as well? Because you said you approached the Delaware County Historical Society, and a lot of those historical societies tend to be repositories of a lot of information. But I have a feeling that in many places around the country, our story wasn't collected. So have you gotten any, two things, genealogy and the historical society?
Absolutely. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from many historical societies. The Aston Historical Society, the Middletown Historical Society, the Media Historical Society, and also the folks down at the Delaware County Historical Society in Chester on Avenue of the States have been really, really great. They actually had a folder about my family. So they had known about the Ortigas and the Ridleys and the Lemons and things like that. So they have been maintaining a folder about my family's history and development. So I wanted to make sure that they also had this, so it would complete, you know, the cycle of information. So every single person that is connected with the historical societies, and also I'm a member of a group called the Media Old Timers / Media Hall of Fame. And what they have allowed me to do is select 4 or 5 different individuals that from my book for induction every year in the Media Sports Hall of Fame. So we've gotten a lot of people that time has forgot. Mm-hmm. And we,
so most of this is posthumous recognition?
Yes, and we inducted posthumously. It's the banquet is every first Wednesday of November, and it's a really great affair. If you want to write to me or email me at jclemon2@yahoo.com, I can give you information for that. But we inducted posthumously a great athlete that played sports at Media High School 1935 to 1937, named Paul Somerville Sr. And as it turned out, Paul Somerville Jr. is also a graduate of Media High School. And several of his children, Lonnie Somerville, Loretta Somerville, also went to Cheney, and they were graduates of Cheney. So Cheney and Media have a very, very strong bond as far as education and things like that, support.
Pull that up. I'll get a picture of you. All right, any closing comments you want to share with us before we let you go?
Well, I
want to say thank you because we attempted to do this several months ago. It seemed like there was always something coming up. We finally able to get this done. So it's great to see you again. I was glad that you were able to make it out to Cheney's homecoming. And the book is quite fascinating. Even if you didn't, you're not familiar with Delaware County or Media High School, it is a resource and a reservoir of information about black people. Like you said, it's very inspirational, it's very touching, because we live in a time when a lot of superficialities and silliness is promoted. We don't see a lot of character and things that our immediate ancestors and forefathers talked about, developing good character and perseverance, doing what you have to do to survive an often hostile environment. And Black Gold is definitely a legacy and a saga and a chronicle of that. So you'd be commended for that.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why I picked the title Black Gold, because the African-American community in the United States has been a tremendous resource and reservoir of knowledge and talents and things like that to the country in general. And I wanted to make sure that people in Delaware County were aware or are aware of the contributions of African Americans. At a time when African Americans were not allowed to go to law school, my great grandfather persevered and became the first Black lawyer in Delaware County. Not by attending college, by clerking, being the first clerk at the courthouse, and a judge, a very liberal judge, tutored him to pass the bar examination. Mm-hmm. And through a lot of hard work, he was able to pass the bar through this private tutoring of the judge and became the first Black attorney. And
yeah, but that wasn't, there was a time when that was an option. Yeah, everybody didn't have to go to law school, you know,
right,
particularly in the 19th century.
Right.
I don't know about the 20th century, but the 19th century, that was an option that a lot of the whites had. We certainly didn't have.
Well, we were very blessed to have that. And again, education has been very important from the time my first ancestors, you know, arrived here. They were not able to get an education. They died illiterate. But they instilled enough of a desire to education in their children, and they passed that on to their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and they passed it on to me. And I just am blessed to have the ancestors that I had and the opportunities that I had to be an educated man, and especially from the media community and also Cheney. So I'm indebted to all of the people that took the time to help me gain the knowledge to be successful in the way I am today.
Right. The other part of the last question about the genealogy, have any genealogy societies contacted you about how you did your research, or do you give lectures and talks to them? Because I know there's one in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if there are a lot of other Black genealogy societies, because like I said, it's so tough to do.
Well, I have been contacted by any society, but I have been contacted by numerous people that want some tips on, you know, how do you find this? How do you start? You know, where do you look and things like that. And I'm always willing to, you know, help people explore their roots, because when you don't know your roots, it's like a tree that is not solidly placed in the ground. So everybody wants to know, or everybody that I've ever met wants to know where they came from. And sometimes it's a beautiful story, and sometimes it's not a beautiful story. But the fact of the matter is that your ancestors survived in many situations and overcame many obstacles, all right? And be proud of the accomplishments that they made, because they lived in a different time. You know, we live in a time where we have all these freedoms and stuff like that. For our ancestors, look, they were not allowed to read or write or work certain places or be school teachers or things like that. And we had a society in the United States which was perpetuated on keeping down minorities. You know, from slavery, when slavery ended, you know, mental slavery started, you know. So I think we owe it to ourselves and we owe it to our ancestors to make sure that there's a connection between the past and the present and the future.
Right. Before we let you go, give us the name of your company, the name of the book, and your contact information, and we'll let you go with our gratitude.
All right. Thank you very much. And I appreciate the opportunity to see you again and say hello to your beautiful wife. The name of the book is Black Gold, the African-American athlete at Media High School during the era 1915 to 1966. It's a wonderful book. It's chock full of pages and stuff like that, information. And my company is Diversified Communication Services, P.O. Box 1481, Bellmawr, B-E-L-L-M-A-W-R, New Jersey, 08099. Website, www.AfricanAmericanAthlete@MediaHighSchool.com. And my email address is jclemon2@yahoo.com. More than happy to correspond with you, help you start your search for your roots. And again, at any time, if you need a speaker about African American history or things like that, I'll be more than happy to come out and grab us.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Diversity is a place that no army with artillery can invade.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates. No denomination, faith dominates, and no court is going to try any.